I'm Stanford Greenberg. I teach legal writing here at Chicago Kent College of Law. And if nothing else, I came up with the title Back to the Future of Legal Research. I feel I've made one contribution, and I hope it's not all downhill from there. I want to begin by thanking Keith Stuyvesant and Mary Rose Struby for organizing this symposium. I want to thank my colleagues Elizabeth DeArmond, Ed Harris, and Louis Schrader, who helped encode some of the open-ended responses to our survey. I want to thank Debbie Ginsberg of our library staff, who put the survey up on SurveyMonkey and taught me, actually 2 years ago, but when we did it the first time, taught me how to figure out how to use SurveyMonkey and break down some of the data by subgroups and the like. And I want to thank Emily Barney, who created some of the great slides, or what I think are some wonderful slides visually that I'm going to be showing you today. The big picture from our 2007 survey is, perhaps not surprisingly, not very much different in large terms from the 2005 survey. We found in our survey of most of the Chicago area attorneys, Illinois attorneys, a tremendous and growing reliance on electronic as opposed to print research, heavy reliance especially on the two commercial online powerhouses, Lexis and Westlaw, but also growing interest in use of familiarity with a variety of free online sources ranging from Google searches to the use of government websites. But perhaps most interesting of all, at least to those of us who teach legal writing, we found that there was a very significant concern that valuable, what I will call, print research-oriented skills are being lost when our students dive in too quickly and too sometimes indiscriminately into the world of commercial online research. Just a couple notes before we get into the data on, and I hope you all have a copy of the handouts. I'll be going through a number of these quite quickly. On most of the slides, there's an indication of the number of respondents who answered each of the individual questions, so to speak, N:X. And I also want to mention that for those of you those of you who like numbers, many of the totals do add up to more than 100% because for some of the, especially the open-ended responses, we coded them in more than one way. All right, so changes in the last 5 years. Again, great increase in the use of online resources, and when we could, we broke that down into fee-based online or free online, such as Google or listservs or blogs. And 1 out of 10 of the respondents to that question in some way indicated that they saw a problem with an over-reliance or unsophisticated reliance on online research. A number of people noted that print libraries were being closed, but print resources were disappearing. On the positive side, approximately 1 in 10 noted in one way or another that various online resources were becoming easier to use. And some of the other responses. A few quotations to illustrate this. This first quotation illustrates that people see an increased reliance on online research, but that's not always a good thing. Not necessarily a good thing because young associates often fail to develop concepts as a result of their myopic use of keywords. But here, everything is trending online, and this quotation I chose because it represents a phenomenon of the convergence of print and online. At least for Lexis and Westlaw, many traditional print media are now being placed online and are available. This next slide discusses the importance of free resources. For those of you from outside of Illinois, ICL is our state continuing legal education program. And here's one of my favorites. And I'll come back to this theme a couple times today. It is not just a question that the new associates are into computers, and the more experienced lawyers only like print and are computer folks. Fact is, and you'll see this with a little more detail in some of the later slides, people with more than 16 years experience do a lot of online research, but they're much more likely to do it on free alternatives to LexisNexis Law. Next, we asked a question about what changes do you anticipate in the next 5 years. Again, the results are not too surprising. More materials online, more free or lower cost online options, an increase in online research, etc. Again, at least some optimism, 15% indicated that they anticipated improved online search tools. The first quotation I chose illustrates that there's going to be a lot more online, but there's so much online. There's so much of the legal research universe in general, but especially now online, that it's becoming increasingly difficult to sift through it all to get at what is important. And that's certainly, for those of us who teach legal research, a great challenge. This next one, again, the theme of convergence of print and online. Here an optimistic prediction that there will be an improved user interface, better emulation of print, and a more efficient platform-independent browser services. Again, options to the two commercial powerhouses, more free or lower cost options. ISBA is the Illinois State Bar Association, which, if you remember ISBA, you get access to fast paste, so you're not, which is a limited research source, I'm sure, but at least gives lawyers who belong to ISBA, once they pay for their membership, a free or at least very low cost access to Illinois case law and the like. We also asked, what changes would you like to see in legal research training? And this is, again, this is one of my favorite prints, because while everybody, the vast majority of our respondents say, oh, the world's becoming more online, the world's becoming more online, the world's becoming more online, the most frequent answer to this open-ended question was, continue teaching print. When we had this conference symposium 2 years ago, and there was a breakout session at the end, and perhaps the person who said this is in the audience again today, somebody referred to books as dead tree icons. And I was very wounded, but I incorporated it every time I can since. Maybe we're fooling ourselves to think that it pays to continue teaching print, but what I think it means is that we have to print, that we have to continue to teach some of the skills that we typically have associated with print research. But they're really skills and not resources so much. The other two most prominent responses, more free online sources and to focus on constructing better, more targeted online searches. And again, I've chosen a few quotations to illustrate that. The first one actually is from one of the Brave New World people who thinks that we can get rid of teaching about print research in general because online is the way of the future. But a number of our respondents indicated that maybe we shouldn't move too quickly or too completely in that direction. This person says, stress the fact in training new lawyers, stress the fact that the best research works with a refined research, with a refined search strategy as opposed to a shotgun approach that will yield multiple hits. It is a good idea to sit down and think about what you want and sometimes more importantly what you don't want. And the temptation for students who have free Lexis and Westlaw access is just to go to a database and start trying to find that one perfect case or the exact provision of the statute which will give them the answer rather than strategizing. And one of my goals as a legal research teacher is to try to convince them to resist that temptation. I'm not always successful, but I try. And here's one of the more experienced people who says that we use Lexis and Westlaw, but I know, the person writing this, I always end up doing things the long way because I don't seem to know the most effective way to get what I want. So, yes, we have to teach online, but we need to try to create more efficient, effective online researchers. And here's a person who I think had a nostalgia for Gentry icons, but I'll let you read that at your leisure. And I'm going to go through the demographic slide very quickly, but just to give you a quick idea. Approximately two-thirds of our respondents were from private firms, and approximately a quarter are government attorneys. This slide indicates the number of attorneys in the local firm or office. Approximately, if you add up the sole practitioners, those in firms with 2 to 6 or 7 to 15 comes out to just under a half, I believe. Yeah, a little bit under a half, have 15 or fewer attorneys. And then on the other side, just about a quarter are in firms with 101 to 500 attorneys. We also asked a question about if your office is part of a larger organization, please tell us that. And for this slide, NA, not applicable, means my office is not part of a larger organization. So nearly half of the respondents to that question are not in an office that's part of a larger organization. In terms of years of experience, it broke down a little bit more than a third have 0 to 5 years of experience, a little less than a third, either 6 to 10 or 11 to 15, and a bit more than a third, 35%, 16 years or more. We have slides on the nature of the practice, mostly litigation in terms of our respondents. Those who chose the other category had a lot of state appellate attorneys who answered our call to take the survey, and so we got a pretty good group of those. Over half were from Cook County, and almost all the rest practiced in Illinois. In addition to asking the litigation versus transactional question that was up on a slide a couple slides ago, we gave them more options in terms of a particular practice area. And the largest categories were roughly 21% in labor, employment, and employee benefits, just under 20% criminal, 17.7% civil litigation. And in this slide, if anybody wants to look carefully, 5.1% said corporate or transactional, which is significantly below the transactional response a couple slides ago. And I think that may be because of the greater number of options that they had on this question. And of those who chose other in this, we categorized about a third of dealing with Social Security or other individual rights and social benefits, and about a third in business law. We had a self-selected survey with, it's not a scientific sample, but not surprisingly because of the topic, most of the people who answered our survey do conduct a fair amount of legal research. All right, here's where the age and size of firm breakdown gets a little interesting, I hope. Only 1.4% of our respondents who had 0 to 5 years of experience listed print as their most frequent research source. Only 2.9% of the newbies listed free online resources as their most frequent. In contrast, our most experienced attorneys, the green columns, 17.4% print and 17.4% free online, which again illustrates that the most experienced attorneys are not necessarily only wedded to the print sources they learned when they were in law school. They use computers, but they don't use Lexis and Westlaw or other fee-based programs nearly as much as free alternatives. Similarly, the breakdown according to the size of the firm provides an interesting contrast. And I didn't try to give all of the categories here, but just to give you a general idea, a couple of insights. Combining our sole practitioners with those who work in offices of 2 to 6 attorneys, 69 of our respondents, were not usually more likely, but significantly more likely, 10.1% compared to 7.7% for the entire sample. More likely to use print, and vastly more likely to use free online. If you look at the blue column in the fourth set of boxes, 24.6% for our most experienced attorneys compared to 10.8% for the entire sample compared to only 3.8% for the newest attorneys. So I think what that illustrates is that we've got to do, those of us who teach legal research have to do a better job in introducing students to the use of free online resources, because their firms are going to value that when they go out into practice. The next set of slides, I'm going to leave to your looking at them on the handout unless there are any questions. We also ask our new attorneys trained by organizations to do legal research. My colleague Tom Gaylord is going to be reporting on a related survey of law firm librarians, and he probably has more accurate data there because the librarians are more likely to know about that than the attorneys responding. But a significant number of the attorneys indicated that there is such training in those firms. Of those who get training or who know about training in their firms, the three most frequent types of skills emphasized are where and how to find the law, how to conduct research efficiently, and how to conduct research in a cost-effective manner. In terms of the resources emphasized in new attorney training, LexisNexis Westlaw is way ahead, but a significant proportion indicated that print resources are still being taught, and free online resources, 25 respondents indicated that. And then number of the last sets of slides, we asked three sets of a pair of questions, one for print resources, one for free, one for fee-based online, and one for free online. And for each of those categories, we ask, are new attorneys who come to your firm directly out of practice, or your organization directly out of practice or from a judicial clerkship, are they aware of useful resources of this category, and then are they able to use such resources efficiently prior to any in-house sponsored training? For print resources, combining always the is it purple or lavender, and often the yellow or gold response, which is roughly 26% are aware of helpful print resources, 20%, 19 to 20% able to use such resources efficiently. For fee-based online resources, the numbers increase to 38% combining always and often for awareness, and 33% combining always and often for able to use them efficiently. Again, on the free online, we're not doing as good a job as we should. The attorneys who responded reported that only 22% of new attorneys in their organization were even aware of helpful free online resources. And here, if you look only at the always category, it's really very small, only 4%. And about 1 in 10 can use them efficiently. All right, so we asked, we had one more open-ended question at the end, and I chose just three quotations here. We frequently have to write off fee-based research costs because new lawyers don't know how to use it efficiently. I chose that one because I think in the very, very, very hard task of getting our students not to rely excessively on Lexis and Westlaw, one glimmer of hope is if we can convince them that their value to their firms will be undermined if they don't learn how to conduct research efficiently. If they just say, oh, well, I can do 18 different searches because it's not costing me anything, rather than take the hour or 2 hours or 3 hours to step back and strategize before they get online and start incurring costs. The next one I chose is from a relatively recently graduated attorney who said, you know, training in his or her school was predominantly Lexington Westlaw, but now that this person's in practice, he or she would love to have had more training on print resources, but especially in learning how to navigate various free online resources. And finally, I chose this quotation because it really puts the emphasis on, as I think those of us who teach legal research increasingly have to do, on the process, on the importance of not simply focusing on the containers, whether they be free online, commercial online, or print, not just focusing on the containers, but focusing on the contents and especially on the strategies necessary to do efficient and effective online research. Okay. Thanks very much. If there are any questions, we'll take them all at the end of the presentation, the three presentations. And next presentation will be from my colleague, one of our great reference librarians here at Chicago, Tom Gilbert.
A whole lot of data because I'm going to focus more on some of the differences between this survey 2 years ago and the survey today. Besides, a lot of the data that we collected from the librarians comes out along the same way that the data that we got from the attorneys came out. So all the data is included in the handout. You can look at it there. By quick show of hands, how many people were here 2 years ago? And how many of you filled out the survey both times? We actually had a lot more respondents this time. We had 60 2 years ago and 98 this time around, which is a 63% increase. But on many of the substantive questions, we had as few as 35% of the survey responders answering. So really, we're dealing with soft data here. I don't think the numbers are hard enough to put a lot of reliance on them, except that they do at least reflect perceptions, as far as that goes. So basically, I'm really going to skip ahead. Well, because Sanford mentioned this, our new attorneys trained to do legal research, I will present this one. And our response rate was 85% yes, which is about 5% higher than it was 2 years ago. But I want to jump ahead to basically my last five slides. Beginning with all the rest of the data, you can read that. Finally, you can ask questions about that if you haven't. You can email me in the future if you have any questions about that. I will also email this to you if you didn't pick it up. The recommendations to law schools. Now, the first three up there, the top three, were suggested responses in the answer, which to some extent probably inflated their values a little bit. However, the third one, subject area knowledge, that the students don't come out with enough research skills in their practice areas, that's up a full 100% over last time. Part of that, I'm sure, is due to the fact that it was a suggested answer, but that probably doesn't account for all of it, and it was something that was borne out in the focus groups, which we did this year for the first time. It was also something that we heard a lot, at least myself, Mary Rose Ruby, Doug Godfrey, probably some of you took part in a West roundtable on legal research back in the fall, which they also did in other parts of the country, and lack of research skills in particular subject areas was something that often came up. The other category captured a lot of singular responses having to do with legislative process, regulations, non-legal research, and updating sources. Trends the last 5 years, too much reliance on electronic, that's top one here as it was 2 years ago. Google is, though, getting a lot more mentions now than it did 2 years ago. The last one, students who think they know it all, that's not really a trend in the last 5 years. That's more of a permanent trend. in fact, I probably was personally involved in promoting that about 10 years ago. But the greater implication of Google is something that we're certainly seeing. And when we look at trends for the next 5 years, once again, ever-decreasing reliance on electronic over print, that was the same number one trend as 2 years ago. Something that was mentioned occasionally 2 years ago, but with more frequency now, was the integration of electronic legal research with firms' knowledge management software. And I think that's something that we'll start to see more of, especially if we do this again 2 years from now. I also think that's something where it's obviously going to be something that's going to have to be trained on the firm end rather than on the law school end. More forms for your writing skills, that one was not really mentioned 2 years ago, and that's a little frightening. More non-legal research, more small vendors filling niche roles. That's very similar to one of our major responses last time around, which was more cost-effective vendors. And I think we are seeing some smaller vendors, at least in the short run, filling some niche roles, but you know, it may only be a matter of time before they're gobbled up. The last one I think is very interesting, the need to establish guidelines for, quote, Google for legal research. That probably scares some people off who would prefer that the new attorneys don't go to Google for any sort of legal research. But I do tend to see it kind of like the abstinence education versus sex education. We know they're going to do it, so perhaps it's better if we give them some guidelines. Now the bad news, the changes from this year to last. Virtually all the negative indicators went up and virtually all the positive indicators went down. They're less efficient, they know less about the practice areas and all that. The percentage, the question, are new attorneys able to research efficiently, that dropped by almost half, from about 35% to about 18%. Once again, soft numbers, this is soft data, but at least it tells you what the perception is. The percentage of new attorneys unaware of print resources in their practice area went up almost 30%. That's different than the practice area generally, because that question just focused on print resources. The last one isn't necessarily bad news. The number of firms with flat fee arrangements with their most used vendors significantly increased. Now, that question, unfortunately, we phrased a little bit differently than last time, which may account for some of the increase. By putting in most used vendors, that probably created some of the increase in that. There's both good news and bad news with regards to that specific answer. The good news, obviously, is that that means less instances of newer attorneys running up, you know, over budget research costs because it's captured by the flat fee and you don't have to worry about that. The bad news is that with a flat fee arrangement, there's no incentive for them to get any more efficient at searching. And so that's the dark side of the flat fee arrangement. They're spending the same amount of research time, even though it's not costing the same amount of money. They're not getting any better at it. The other dark side of this is going to depend on individual arrangements, is that if the flat fee only covers certain parts of the database, not megafiles and things like that, and they don't realize when they leave the flat fee arrangement and enter the transactional or hourly arrangement, then we're right back to the problem we had before we had flat fee arrangements, where they're once again running up exceptional costs and they don't realize that they're doing it. And finally, the semi-good news, or at least the softening of the blow of the bad news. This time we did two focus groups with a total of 10 librarians, where what they told us, at least in the focus groups, was not nearly as dire as the data we were getting from the survey. All of these were mentioned on more than one occasion in the course of the focus groups. In many cases, there appeared to be a lot more in-house training being done than 2 years ago, and even more than what the survey results suggested. Because obviously the survey only asked yes or no, and they trained in-house. The focus group suggested that the in-house training. Not only is it being done more often, but it's being done more in depth. And as a lot of firms move into using knowledge management resources, have an intranet that focuses on firm-specific resources, we expect that that's going to increase as well. One thing we got from the focus groups that we did not see on the survey, but we saw that I saw both in the West Roundtable and like I said, in the focus groups, is that one of the additional recommendations to law school would be more training in state-specific resources. Obviously, that, at least from a law school perspective, that can be very difficult to do because most doctrinal courses aren't taught from a state perspective. If they're taught from any perspective at all, it's federal because that's universal to everybody. And so I don't know that we have a way to do a lot of that unless you specifically have students who want to take a really simple procedure and so forth. But that was certainly one thing that came out of the focus groups that was a capture on the survey, was a lack of state-specific resource training. With that, I'm going to pass it on to Patrick Meyer, the Associate Library Director and Adjunct Professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, who did kind of the same stuff that we did, only in cities outside of Chicago.
Good morning. On the website, I'm going to have, I'm not sure if they're going to put this presentation on or not, they are, but I'm also going to have a few other things too. The raw data in an Excel spreadsheet, the total raw data, I should say, of all 162 valid law firm responses, the data by region, and then an interesting little comparison documents based on the results I obtained in late 2004 when I did the same survey based on, and I'm comparing that with the survey which lasted the last 3 months probably or more before it finished. And so the caveat there is that it's not always an apples comparison simply because of the way I presented the answer results in some instances. And I have noted those caveats whenever they apply to any of the answer sets. So I administered this legal research e-survey to several regional AA chapter listservs, which covered certain cities such as LA, San Diego, New York City, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco, among others. I also administered it to the PLLSIS listserv. I'm just focusing on the 162 valid law firm surveys here. I received 199 valid surveys in all. The next largest group was government. I chose to present today's presentation by firm size instead of by region based on the number of questions I get asking me to summarize certain data. It's almost always, well, but what is it with if you're in a firm between 1 and 50? You know, I'm going to go practice in a firm, a small firm, or I'm from a medium-sized firm, and my answers may differ. You know, the answers may differ than for other-sized firms. And so I'm going to basically bypass every count slide, the one that says by kind of, the ones that say by kind of. I just put them in there just to give you an idea of the breakdown of responses by firm size. So there were 28 in the firms that had one between 1 and 50 attorneys, 46, 50 through 100, 51 through 100. 88 responses, 101 plus for a total of 162. I thought the more interesting and revealing slides were by percentage. Okay, so this question, this was actually two questions in one. What databases does your firm have available? And then to the right of the slash would be what databases must your new associates must they know how to use? And so Obviously, Westlaw and Lexis was very high up on the list for each firm category, and not only in the had available to them, but the must knows. Those percentages were, of course, very close, as you can imagine. Pacer was the third most prevalent must know, at way down to 25%. And the way this worked, basically, as you could probably imagine, the larger the law firm, the less likely Pacer was a must know, and that went from 39% in the smallest firms down to 18% for the largest firms. Then 15% of the firms required knowledge of CourtLink. Large firms allow access to live editor at a greater rate than small firms do. Went from 80% to 64%. And now I'm going by. Somehow I started over. I'm sure how we did that. Apparently, sources available and must know. And I skipped the percentage slide here. And some of the winners, I guess, the winner totals were highlighted in red. I know there's lots of numbers here. That's why they're probably figured that out a long time ago. But just in case you haven't thought about it, that's what the red is. And so, as you can see, still about half the respondents say that the federal reporters are must-knows. The U.S. code is getting to two-thirds. And this is in print. And a higher percentage of larger firms offer access to all print-based federal materials shown on this slide than the smaller firms do. A special note here on the Federal Digest went from 36% in the small firms to 76%. Federal administrative decisions from 11 to 34%, the CFR from 54 to 85%. No large percentage difference really between the between firm size for any of the must-know sources or the ones to the right of the slash. And now we're getting into the state print sources available or must-know. State legislative codes pretty much lead the way, 87% available in total, 64% say their new hires need to know them. It's the same trend, basically, as I mentioned just a few seconds ago. Large law firms offer higher percentage of access to all of the state sources shown on this slide. You can look especially at the state administrative law decisions and codes, which went from 14 to 47% to 64 to 88%, respectively. Percentage between firm size of the must-know print sources is pretty much similar, except for state cases, which went from 61% to 41% from the smaller to the larger firms. And just yell at me if I'm on the wrong side of the slide other than what I'm talking about, because that could easily happen here. Print sources available, must know. There's a few others, state and regional materials. The same trend once again, larger firms providing the higher percentage of access. And again, no real difference between the must knows by firm size. Most important research tasks. This time I combined the counts and then the percentages in the same boxes. And this is what I would consider the significant statistical differences on this page. Small firms, a higher percentage of small firms felt that cases and digests were the most important tasks, and then larger firms at a plus 9% rate from 86% to 77%, a plus 12% rate on legislative codes, 10% on secondary sources over the large firms. On the other hand, large firms were plus 12 over small firms on the importance of shepherdizing the key site. And another slide for you to look at your leisure. Best job done in books versus online. By percentage. and I thought it was pretty interesting. 0.6% of the respondents thought that you should be doing shepherdizing. I'm assuming not. He's not. You can't do that in books, right? But shepherdizing in the books. And that's actually, if you look at the prior slide, that's one person out of 162. And I don't know about you, but I'd really like to know who that person is. And if you're in here, don't raise your hand. And nearly 80% pick secondary sources as should be done books versus 9% said you should do those online. And legislative codes were a little over 50% saying you should do them in the books versus 18% online. And full documents by site, that was the big winner, of course, for doing it online. This is the count slide. So percentage slide again was 78%. And I just felt it would be interesting then to get some information on Westlaw and Lexis. I did have an ulterior motive to this. Of course, I've been hearing for several years, you know, flat rates and misnomer, and you know, there's almost always limits. And sure enough, there is. Now we have more numbers to show that. If you notice, out of all 162 responses, 111 had a Westlaw flat rate plan and 117 had a Lexis flat rate plan. That's 228 flat rate plans, of which 8 of them were unlimited. Not quite 220, as far as I know, were limited, because a few didn't answer the question, but it was more like 215 out of the 228 had some limits, whether it be jurisdiction or by subject matter or what have you. And also of note here, still several of the respondents had transactional hourly. In fact, many respondents had all three types of plans. Many even more had two of the three. And I guess the moral of the story is, of course, the implication for us is that we need to be sure that we teach them the basic differences between the basic three plans so they don't get out and flounder. And let's see, I think I have a closing slide here. These are just some of the many, many responses, reasons for high online charges. And you're all familiar with them. Reading using the hourly, reading online, ignoring the dollar signs and Lexis, unaware that some information is online for free, which is what you both touched. Free law school searching, yeah, we get that a lot. Not limiting the citing references in KeyCite, or the focus restrict by in Shepherds, I'm sure would be the same thing. Starting with case law research instead of getting the lay of the land first. Not planning before going online, not using focus locate, sediments, fields. I have much more data and comments that I don't even know if I'm going to provide that for the website. Certainly at some point I'm really going to try to do some sort of an article that sums this up, because there's not a lot that ever really gets printed, and I think it's really important. If you have questions, I'm pretty much finished now, and if you have questions for us, fire away.
There's one down here.
Hi, thanks. You guys have done this a couple times now. Do you use these slides, the data, the information, in your legal research classes to try to persuade students that they should focus on paying attention to digital types of resources, i.e. grant or online free stuff? And how does that work when you present them with your legal research?
Well, I can't answer the latter about how it goes over, at least I can't with any degree of certainty. But I have incorporated a little of the information and a few of the quotations from the 2005 survey, and I may even have done that the first day of class. Or the first research class. And in a broader sense, it has begun to inform my teaching, though I don't think I've gone as far in making changes as I need to go, as I need to do. But it definitely has influenced my teaching.
I'm in a little bit of a different situation at Stanford because I don't teach legal research and writing. I do in-class presentations, but only for the second-year classes. But as Stanford says, it has certainly informed my presentations, and I will, where possible, use things that we learned from the survey in pointing out why they should pay attention to a particular way of doing things. But no, we've never presented them with the hard data or the soft data.
You better believe I do every chance I get, especially since it takes so long to crunch the numbers. You know? And I had, in fact, for several years, crafted my class based on feedback from firm attorneys, I guess basically mostly the ones in L.A. where I had worked for several years before moving to San Diego. And, in fact, do offer training on CourtLink, West Dockets, Live Editor, things that I probably would have hesitated to do before. Oh, and do they pay attention? Does the presentation of this these statistics seem to have an effect? You know, it's kind of like a lot of things that you try to get across. It seems to be met with resistance, but you keep trying because it's important. And I have doubts that it affects people who are predisposed to do online research in the first place. Thank God there's always some people in class that would rather do, and I have an integrated class, I do both online and print, that would rather do stuff in print. And kind of softens the harsh reality a little bit for me.
A question about the last survey. Were you contacting firm librarians or lawyers? And do you have any sense about whether these data would be the same if you were looking at governmental offices and House Counsel legal services? Those two questions.
Yeah, the first one, librarians. And the second one, I didn't really get a chance to focus on the government responses, which would be most of the 37 responses I didn't cover today. So I'm sorry. And with the documents that I presented to go on the website, I don't have that info. I would love to get time to crunch some numbers and maybe put it up somewhere, you know, put it up on the website.
Rosenbaum, I have two questions for you, Sandra. One of them is that there were such large numbers of not applicables on your survey, and I wondered if you had any idea where those were coming from. From my point, I was speculating maybe many firms don't really see there any problems because of the flat fee contracts, and so, you know, when they talk about efficiency, maybe there's, yeah, that's not applicable. Then the second question was that for things where, especially the younger attorneys, this would be much more relevant to them, but where they're not feeling prepared for certain things, I'm wondering whether there's a sort of connected question, which is, did your law school offer advanced research classes and did you take advantage of them? Because this is such a continuing process that, you know, if all they're relying on is what they learned in the first year, first of all, we're so limited by all of our things that we need to cover, and second of all, of course, it's only gets better over time. So I'm just wondering, those two things seem to jump out at you from your point of view.
Right. On your question about why the large number of not applicable, you know, in a lot of these, when we were putting the survey up, we said, well, should we just tell them to skip questions that are not applicable, or give them a not applicable option? And for almost all of them, we gave them the not applicable option. Some still skipped, but I can't really say, you know, what it means, except for that one slide where it meant something specific, where we told them it meant something specific, that if your office was not part of a large organization, choose not applicable. But for the others, I can't say with any certainty. In terms of, we didn't ask the respondents anything about their research training.
you know, some people volunteered things, ranging from sending warm personal regards to Professor Strube through the survey. I hadn't told you that yet, but you know.
I was also thinking that high concentration of labor employment.
Yeah, well, there. Yeah, no, well, there is an explanation for that, I'm sure. But we did. You know, we certainly got some people who, in their comments, reflected informally on how they were trained or what they weren't trained as well in. Or said, you know, I think I was trained well, and you know, blah blah blah. But we didn't ask them where they went to law school or anything about their legal research training. Perhaps if we do it 2 years ago, 2 years from now, we'll try something like that. Anybody in the balcony? Okay, this one up here.
I've worked for a law firm. What do you think law firms can do? Because the issues that we have with librarians is that they don't want to. New associates don't have much training because they want them working as quickly as possible, making something that they get our own kind of. It's really hard to get them into any training session.
Okay, the question is from a librarian at a law firm. Did you say a large law firm?
What?
What's the size of your firm, roughly?
A large
law firm. And she said, what can law firms do? Because the firms seem to not want to devote a lot of time and resources to training. They want to get those attorneys generating billable hours. Is that a fair summary?
Got to justify those $160,000 salaries.
Yeah. You know, I think the survey data, as imperfect as it is, and is, you know, not totally scientific, does suggest that there's a perception on the part of a significant number of practicing attorneys that research skills are leading to inefficient, ineffective research, which is also costly to the firm. So just as I try to convince my students, you know. Don't take the shortcut. Don't immediately jump online trying to find a case before you know what the area of law is that you're researching. And I hope, and I think a few of them get that message as the year goes on. Some of the powers that be at your firm can be convinced that in the long run, it will be cost effective for them to devote, you know, somewhat more resources to training new attorneys.
I think something that both law firm librarians and law and academic law librarians can do is make sure that they make themselves accessible. One of the great things about the amount of in-class time I have here is that students recognize me. I believe because of that, they're more likely to come to the reference desk and ask questions. And if they come out of law school with the idea that the librarian is a resource, then hopefully they go to the firm with the same idea. I understand that some places are... they're afraid, oh, is it going to get back to the partner that I asked a stupid question? And, you know, obviously they have to be reassured that that's not going to be the case. But I think librarian accessibility in lieu of formal training has to be there. And that will at least let you train them on a case-by-case basis if there's no formal structure in place. But it starts in law school. Actually, hopefully it starts with, you know, when they're 5 years old going to public school or public library.
Yeah. And we're really looking to hire a reference librarian who specifically has taught before, because we're trying to add as many advanced legal research courses as we can. I teach two every semester, but we need more because we have about 750 students. And anything we can do before they get to you, I mean, that's my goal, is to have them hitting the ground running before they get to you.
Well, I was given the microphone, but I see that it's noon, and I would need to be back this year because everyone else is over. So, Patrick, my question was going to be directed at you, and I'm happy to hold it off until later.
Thank you.